If anybody just would know something, they can do that. If not, I'll probably do this, not the next one, but I'll be doing it. I'll probably do one in November, and it can happen in December. I'm just doing one that I think pops up.
I mentioned the home note. I did it before me. I don't know how many 30s or 20 years again.
I think it was a 53rd. Not fresh anymore.
I've got a couple of things like.
But then came the second language of knowledge, and it's how both matter and light evolve. So we've got the same cosmology, we saw it about 1,000 years evolve from a little singularity. And then we've got the evolution of cells that light evolve from the cell. And so what we're left with is the two very positive origins of the original universe and of the original cell. So cosmogenesis, and then what they call abiogenesis. So that's sort of the time gap argument that we found these days. Can you explain life? We get that one. Okay. So let's get the gap is narrowing, but we still have a gap. Now let me read you from this paper. Has everybody already read it?
Which the type one?
Yes, one of you like that. Okay. I've got edited it down from the original presentation to deal with what we're talking about right now. So writing in Century Past from Neil deGrasse Tyson from November 2005. Writing in centuries past, many scientists felt compelled to write poetic about cosmic mystery and God's handiwork. Perhaps one should not be surprised at this. Most scientists back then, as well as many scientists today, identified themselves as spiritually devout. So careful reading of older texts, particularly those concerning the universe itself, shows that the authors invoke divinity only when they reach the boundaries of their understanding. They appeal to a higher power only when steering the ocean of their own ignorance. They call on God only from the lonely and precarious edge of the comprehension. Where they feel certain about their explanations, however, God gets hardly mentioned. Let's start at the top. Isaac Newton. He's one of the greatest intellects the world has ever seen. His laws of motion and his universal law of gravitation, conceived in the mid-17th century, account for cosmic phenomena that have eluded philosophers for millennia. Through those laws, we can understand the gravitational attraction of bodies and systems, and thus come to understand orbits. Newton's law of gravity enables you to calculate the force of attraction between any two objects. If you introduce a third object, then each one attracts the other two, and the orbits they trace become much harder to compute. Add another object, and another, and soon you have planets in our solar system. Earth and the sun pull on each other, but Jupiter also pulls on Earth, Saturn pulls on Earth, Mars pulls on Earth, Jupiter pulls on Saturn pulls on Mars, and so forth. Newton figured that all this pulling would render the orbits in the solar system unstable. The equations indicated that the planets should long ago either fallen into the sun or fallen into the sun, leaving the solar system. In either case, the sun would be left devoid of planets. If the solar system as well as the larger cosmos appears to be the very model of order and durability. So Newton, in his greatest work of Principia, concludes that God was occasional step in and make things right. And here's a quote from Newton. Quote, the six primary planets are revolved about the sun in circles concentric with the sun, and with motion directed towards the same part and almost in the same plane. But it is not to be conceived that mere mechanical causes could give birth to so many regular motions. This is a beautiful system of the sun planets and suns that only proceeds from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent and powerful being. So, you don't fit the religion of mental endowment. In the Principia, Newton distinguishes between hypotheses. Term complex, he declares, quote, hypotheses, whether metaphysical or physical, whether occult qualities or mechanical, have no place in the study of philosophy. What he wants is data, quote, inferred from the phenomena. But in the absence of data, the border between what he could explain and he could not on it, or he could only on it, the constancy could not identify what he could not, Newton rapturously invokes God, in his metaphor. Eternal and infinite, omnipotent and omniscient, he governs all things and knows all things that are or can be done. We know him only by his most wise and excellent striving to this day. And final comment, we admire him for his perfection, but we reverence and adore him on account of his dominion. Thank you. Now, a century later, then we get the thought, the pumps of Solomon is on the bottom. A century later, French astronomer and mathematician Pierre Simon de la Flotte confirmed Newton's dilemma of unstable orbits head on. Rather than viewing the serious stability of the solar system as the unknowable work of God, Laplace was ready to declare it a scientific challenge. In his multi-part masterpiece, The Mécanique Céleste, the first volume which appeared in 1798, Laplace demonstrates that the solar system is stable over a period of time longer than Newton could predict. To do so, Laplace pioneered a new kind of mathematics called perturbation theory, which enabled him to examine the cumulative effect of many small forces. According to an author seated at probably a Belgian account, on the philosophy of a copy of Mechanique, but in the physics literature and Napoleon Bonaparte, Napoleon has the mortal rule of God's leg and the construction and regulation of Adam. I have no thoughts of leg, Rip replied. I have no need for that hypothesis, which is a bold comment to make but, you know, again, it illustrates when you understand it, all the deity comparisons. Your face is not so hot. Now we need to follow you. We're going to tell you the problem is only based on this stuff. So I think we can include it in this stuff. But this is what Scott Solomon was an ancient astronomer. And what could be, you know, he had in his mind, his planets were over the earth. But there's a phenomenon that's made retrograde motion, where sometimes one of the planets is going to the sky, or it's forward, and then they turn the loop back and turn it right to the solar again. And that was an example of the phenomenon. What could possibly do this? Does anybody know what that is to? Well, when we're looking at a planet that's in the outer orbit, right, it's further than the sun than the Earth, say Mars, for example. It's going slower than the Earth, it's a little farther. There's a place where we're coming up on. And so, you think we might wonder, right, that is the passage, we're going backwards, and as we get around, we'll pull the other side of the sun, and think we're going forward again. That's all. It's just an optical illusion that occurs when the interior, sometimes the interior is looking at the slower one. The next year of Arctic and that's where I'm very much. But that's just not a problem. Until he got to that problem, he didn't have a problem with the planets running around the sun and among the rocks. But he couldn't figure that problem. So, I think it's what we're dealing with. Apart from understanding, plenty of scientists who say, they would call it God, Word of God, wherever the confirmation phase is anywhere. Consider the 2nd century AD Alexandrian astronomer Ptolemy. Armed with the description, but no real understanding what the planets were doing up there, he could not contain his religious fervor. And here's his quote. I know that I am one of my nature, being temporal. But when I trace, at my pleasure, the windings to and fro of heavenly bodies, I no longer touch earth with my feet. I stand in the presence of Zeus himself, and I take my fellow men earlier. The first example is the Sonata. I'm pretty impressed with what those guys did. I said, you know, I could never figure out the Earth is moving. There's no clue to me that the Earth is moving. I would believe it on moving on Earth, but as he was trying to understand how the bodies around the Earth, he ran into a problem. I think the most fascinating ancient history of astronomy has to be of Dali, who predicted an earthquake. How much observation you had to do with these guys, where you could put together enough of what you say, I think I put a certain time and date that's going to happen again. Is that not how the aspect calendar was based? I've never heard the aspect predicting an eclipse.
No, not an eclipse, but it's like a thousand.
But they didn't have comparisons. They didn't actually study these factors. But a lot of stuff is speculative.
Yeah.
Without being confined by revelation or some religious nurture. So Solomon thought that everything was, that the whole world was made one substance. He could only in one substance that he existed for solid way to death. So he said, I didn't really want. And they went very long, of course. But it's just smart, right?
So when he predicted the effect, he just did it through observation. He didn't have a model theory. He couldn't have got a model.
I don't know what he used. And I mean, if you can find this, if the claim is made that he did it, I find it very difficult to believe anybody can do that.
Well, I guess if you observe the windows of the sun over a long period of time, you know that it's getting there, getting close to the sun. That's pretty
impressive. I'm very impressed.
And of course, that's the hallmark of unknown phenomena.
You can make predictions like that.
Right.
That's scientific philosophy, okay? Which I think is what nitrogen on the Constitution, I think, what we're thinking about. And the difference between biblical and scientific philosophy. Yes.
I'm not
saying.
What was the name of the scientist?
Well, he's actually lost all of us, but he's called the scientist. It's C-H-A-L-E-S. Dolly's in the label.
So where was it?
And one of the Greek things.
Or Alexander.
No, Lathus is where. His whole name is Dolly's in the label. I never heard it pronounced as a point that it might be more than that. Okay, that's it, Paul. Well, consider the 17th century Dutch scholar Christian Huygens, whose achievement was in describing the first working pendulum clock, discovering the ring of Saturn. In a charming book, The Celestial World's Discovery, posthumously published in 1696, most of the opening chants to celebrate all that was then known as planetary orbit exchange and science as well as the planet's early brightness, he presumed rocky. The book even includes full out charts illustrating the structure of the solar system. Not as absent from this discussion, even though Aaron said to you earlier, the television's achievement, planetary orbit is a supreme mystery. The celestial world also brims with speculation about life and the solar system. Now, this is an area that I've never seen nothing about. He's comfortable with physical science. So we speculate that the biological science is kind of lost. Huygens raises questions. That's where he mentions the biological conundrum of the day, such as the origin of life's complexity. And sure enough, because 17th century physics is more advanced than 17th century biology, Huygens devotes the hand of God only when he talks about biology. I suppose nobody will deny that there's somewhat more of a contrivance, somewhat more of a miracle in the production of both the plants and animals than the lifeless heat of inanimate bodies. For the finger of God and the wisdom of divine providence is in them much more clearly manifest than in the others. Today's echo of philosophers punch all that kind of divine invocation down the gates.
I copied this thing, and so I had a question. I don't totally agree with McNeil's observations. At the time of Newton and any of these others, the religious people were extremely important. They could make a breaking point. And in fact, that's what they did in 1600, exactly to Roman, right? And,
it was burned. It was burned.
Yeah, worse than that. I mean, they drove something through his cheek so he couldn't scream. And, what I'm trying to say is that many of these scientists in those days, there was a political edge to this thing. I mean, it's like a couple of years back, basically. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why God is mentioned as in almost as an aspect.
Rather than
that's exactly what I'm saying.
I thought of that.
Can you repeat that, please? What I'm saying is basically that the scientists, they're giving lip service to God because it was unhealthy to do otherwise.
He suggested something God mentioned weren't necessarily sincere, the religious executive in a high community, and you might not do that.
One of the reasons I thought of that is because you know, ostracization of, you know, for the religious reasons, it's still the government crisis there, you know.
Sure.
And so, I mean, they don't feel any moral, but sometimes they do that too. You know, like the people in the Middle West, right?
Yeah,
so I think that is the way I think it is, not the way you guys and stuff.
Well, it'd be interesting to look at the great way of figuring out which is where they're doing it because of what they're talking, or were they covering their ass?
Well, you could, I wonder if it would be any way this one. It's an interesting
I don't know really your favorite poem. I think first one that really could have been any pieces of thought. I know it didn't work. And if you go back further, I don't think they're atheists. Atheism is pretty hard to justify if you don't have an alternate hypothesis.
And
you know, I would have been an atheist if I learned from
the religion. Well, they wouldn't know, but then they were not conscious of the term. I mean, it didn't exist. You know, but there were a lot of people that never gave up.
Possibly
when I
got them all in the spirit. But the time you got into Darwin, you didn't have any
sense. Right. I mean, I still remember, you know, I'm from the Netherlands, and we have family in the south of the Netherlands, which is called the Catholic. And my uncle, you know, dutifully on Sundays, would go to church if he can do it. So he would be just there, and in the doors a lot of people would pass him from the house. And then after he thought he had enough, you know, he went back home.
He wasn't if he wanted to be there, he wanted to be
there. Without doing that,
you know. But it's funny people that don't believe in life church. They like the community, and they like, they go to hymns, they go to church if it's fun for them, but they don't believe.
Yeah, well, community also is a relative thing, I think. You know, I know that my uncle was very much liked in the area because he was always ready to help and his whole child, all of his life. And it was very popular. But the church was not the thing. And he didn't like the priest coming to the house because they were only saying that they were shot with booze.
Anthony answered it out. So I was South Tyson is that tree form church. I think what we're going back to though is this notion of God, which has always been a control mechanism. And I know when I was always rebellious and born with my eyes open and set to study school, the Baptist Born Church study school, and they used to say at night, "Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to save." And I thought, that's why I'm in a thumbnail. And I couldn't imagine this God, you know, taking away my life in my sleep. So I was always talking to Jesus about it. But the thing I also, when we're getting back to, he's doing a fabulous job because he's getting children interested. The first astronomer to really get children interested. But when we were talking first about knowledge, and then getting to this end, and then finding nowhere to go, they end up God. And I think when we're young, we're sent to school and we understand a body of knowledge. And then we go up a little bit further and widen this body of knowledge. And then it goes on, but then it seems to stop. And I didn't stop myself because I thought that it was much broader than I could possibly understand or take in. But I understand, first of all, the political incentive for scientists to invoke God because of political pressure. We took advantage of the Christian Church to elect for that because that was the best pulpit to incite involvement. But we used the church, not that we were. I think that if you have you watched the movie The Man Who Blew It, I found that fascinating. Again, as he invoked in the last moment, how did you get these formulas in your head? And you wonder about the people that are born, that when he saw the problems of common authority, did he have the formula and he said it just was there? And then in the anthem of the invoked that God put it there. I'm not sure, since he was Indian, whether that was true or whether the movie needed the explanation. So, I think in our social society that we also need to end it with some invocation of God. Because right now, I think people are invoking God a lot because of the turmoil in the world, that there's more common sense. But is that necessary? No, I don't think so, because we haven't gotten to the progressive society with critical thinking that can take over at least half that space. I know it when I was at St. John's College that with a great book, you were not allowed in the seminar to invoke God at all for the first 2 years of Greek philosophy, because it wasn't in there. And I found that really difficult because you've been so indoctrinated with it to try to debate without the use of God or some kind of spiritual power.
Do you
think that
was a good idea or bad?
Oh, it's great
for me. I don't agree. I mean, if you can't think about God, it's fine a lot of time.
Well, you have to take that, to understand what has been imprinted in your mind to force you to think around it and find another explanation. Amen.
Do you think we've got some threshold where there isn't the need to involve God anymore?
Well, that's in many people, and more younger people, yes, but for others, it's that ass.
The cost of hurricane to that was when we saw a horse, who rolled by the wrong.
The magic killer. I think with scientists, it's not really necessary anymore. I mean, it's no longer there. And at least the scientists that I've known, I was a member of the Astro Union out here 900 years ago. We did not on the wrong thing, But anyway, before that, in Holland, and but
I just know quite a few bioscientists, you know, scientists, people that have been sent from Russia and things like that, and they were all, you know, yeah, they wouldn't say I'm an atheist, you know, it's just that, I mean, there's everything come up, I mean, that stuff doesn't exist, I mean, it's just not part of their thinking, you know, unless you discuss it, you know, but this is not, it's not very common.
This is also a fair choice, you've got, you know, we can only involve that to explain the mystery. Obviously, I'm quite comfortable with the mystery. But eventually, we'll, you know, as we progress, we will. Yeah, we'll deal with that. But is there a third option where we accept that we can never, we can never know what's beyond the bounds of our knowledge.
There are limits to knowledge. There's something that will never be known to us.
Yeah.
That's probably correct, but I don't know if you're going to say that.
It's mathematically true that there are things that we can't know that might be true, or that aren't true actually, but we will never be able to discover. There are statements you can make, forget that are true, that are not provable from any other simpler.
The only thing be the use of the word truth is falling within our universe itself.
Like Stephen mentioned at the beginning, there were two issues that are still, how do you deal with?
You mentioned origin problems.
And the origin problem. And I suspect most of us would say, okay with life. So we like to confine to a something. But the origin of the universe itself is somewhat more problematic. Because anything you can talk about in terms of origin, you're already inside the universe. And you can't talk about the outside universe to explain it. So it's really a conundrum. How you could possibly explain, I don't know if you know Dinkle, he's from the New Yorker magazine. And he, some years ago, did a tour talking to all the scientists he could and all the philosophers and the theologians, asking them this one question: why is the world exist? Why is there something rather than nothing? And you get all these things. So I think that'd be an interesting thing to sometimes explore. What are the different ways people see it? What often, like, do we do a God of the gap? Do we? You can't do science, because science is within what already is. And you need to pull something from outside, and you can't talk about that. I think it's a huge conundrum.
I disagree with that.
Okay, so
a little bit. In the sense that, it's true you can't look outside and say, okay, this is how it works. But what you can do is you come up with an idea that is extremely compelling and simple, and explains absolutely everything, and even explains the origin of the Big Bang and the universe. And if we come up with that idea, I think there will be human universal agreement that says, even though we can't, in a sense, prove it because we can't observe it, but when you write down the equations and it all drops out onto your lap and all the masses come out, and everything drops out exactly the way we see it, we're going to say, yeah, that's how it works. We can bring all the way back to zero and say, this is what happened then. I mean, we're very close right now. We're very close to the end.
If it's not coming to your idea itself is part of the universe. And we need a way of explaining what caused your idea.
No, I don't think so. Because it'll be a mathematical thing. Because that's where it comes. That's where it all comes from, for mathematics. And the idea will be compelling. We just haven't got it, but we'll work on it. I'm at your part two. We're comfortable with the mystery, but we're going to solve.
I think there are problems that won't be solved. And, you know, I think one of them is by advantage.
Oh, we're going to make one. We're both players in the lab.
No.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Greg. I think the problem of the first life of biogenesis is possibly one of the solvable problems, the soluble problems. What we should be able to do is show one or several paths that are generated energy feasible by which some small unit molecules and some organizer cells can replicate itself. But who's to say that's the path that that took place on Earth? And who's to say that it took place on Earth and didn't take place somewhere else here? I mean, we're pushing out maybe insoluble. But I think for any biogenesis, I think the rest of the home board show that it's possible, but not to show what happened. I'm going to show what happened. You have to actually find a fossil root or film and be able to recognize that it's the same thing we just created. That would be compelling. But I don't think we're going to get that.
Yeah. Even if we understand the genesis of something, or the first cell was there, or the Big Bang, and you can say, yeah, I get it, I understand it, that's good. Somebody else would come in and say, but who are what caused? Who was the match on the Big Bang? Who put the switch to make that singularity be there? They keep going back and then ask that why question. And then they start throwing in religion.
And which one is multiverse?
Okay, right. There are many, many causes. Many, many
causes. Yeah, I was just going to say, to me, what's interesting is the distinction between the invoking or the creation. For me, the interesting point is the invoking of God, in a sense, based upon a lack of knowledge beyond the hypotheses and the provable, and the invoking of God based upon fear of the unknown, which I think is the traditional reason that the concept of God exists in the minds of many people, so that it's not predicated upon an understanding of existence or origin. And similarly, even if there isn't, and there probably may be, mathematical basis for determining what developed everything, there are other parameters of development via Genesis, which we don't understand, that may not be based upon our theory of atoms and molecules, of atomic particles and so on, that led to a different development that we don't understand, may or may not be in this universe, maybe in a different universe. So it's because the fact of the development of these things, not the fear portion, but the knowledge, can be directed in, I don't want to say parameters or spheres or, you know, multivariate ways that things exist, things that we can't even perceive of. I mean, beyond spectrum of light, beyond spectrum of wavelengths, and so on. And that leads you to believe that is there really infinite creation, not in the sense of God, but infinite creation in the sense of existence, in the sense of matter, of what alternative matter exists. So I don't know. This political explanation is saying they have to invoke God. Maybe they didn't really believe it, but it's a different concept of God. Are we limited in what we can know by our senses? And our senses are pretty crude, right? They were designed really to discover the origin of the universe, but to make sure it was co-created.
It's a good question, but I think one answer is we're less limited than you might think because of the amazing machine. I think I've mentioned this before, but listen to one doctor's TED talk where he's talking about the queerness of the universe. But in fact, he's talking about the queerness of us. What he's saying, look at life in things in three different dimensions. There's us, but there's also stuff at the subatomic level, and there's also stuff with the galaxy. Why would we think that we, at this level, could fathom at all what life is at the subatomic level or at the galaxy level? We are incapably, we're so different from other aspects of the universe that it would be still, to think that we could ever come to that is the kind of thing that. Is that your question?
About the Mandelbrot group? And fractals.
Probably I can't quite
hear you. Mandelbrot. Mammal Brot Bridge. He was the scientist at IBM who is found in taking apart all life forms, a group of fractals that have the shape of a turtle and all kinds of things. Quite an amazing thing, but because that evolved into chaos theory, which I really definitely loved it and loved the idea of chaos theory. And it's the same thing with scientists. But they come to the end and of their research and can't find something else, they call it chaos. And chaos doesn't actually exist. There's a pattern in everything. You just don't see that pattern. And that's the problem of spread and whatnot, of being able to then find a pattern because, as you said, and I was upset about this when I went to college because I was not good in math, but at the end I found out of lecturing and art and everything, the basis of everything is mathematical. And based on that, and there is in chaos theory the same thing, that everything in the universe, outside the universe, even according to Dawkins, is how it's happened. And our mentality is to find that pattern and that formula, find that formula.
I agree with you. We get all the turbulence or something like that, we just call it chaos, but it's only because some.
Yeah.
It's probably deterministic too, but it's just beyond our ability to make it come next. It's not indeterministic, it's just incalculable.
At that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another idea. I'm
going to give one anecdote that my mom told me many years ago. It comes from me because of what John said about Netherlands. And my mom was born in Berlin, northern Germany. And in Germany, northern Germany, southern Germany is Catholic, northern Germany is Protestant. So there are two greetings that people give each other in Germany. One is Guten Tag, which means good day. And southern Germany says Grüß Gott, which means greetings to God. And so to really piss off a southern German person, a Berliner, when they go to southern Germany, they say, the southerner says Grüß Gott. The Berliner would say, then doing these, which means when we see him.
I was talking about a different kind of logical fallacy. So we can talk about the argument of labor and the God of the Gas argument. So I mentioned that one of the ways the God of the Gas argument is used is trying to put, say, my science and religion on equal footing. We believe what you believe, I think. We believe what we believe by faith, therefore it's the same thing. Now, does anybody know what that balance is called?
Oh.
Exactly.
It's like
what
the
doing every day.
The
presentation balance occurs when you use the same word as you use the link in the argument.
And in this case, what they're doing is using the word faith to mean both justified belief and unjustified belief. Because I can use the word both ways. Right? I mean, we just got in the car and we expected it to start. We had faith that the car would start. But that's justified belief based upon experience. And the last 200 or 400 times, well, not that, because we don't know about 200 times the word didn't start, but it's battery. But it's justified to believe that the car will start. And that kind of, it's on that faith, and we're saying, and also God is belief of faith. That's using the same word two ways. And so they're not equal in the final they are. I mean, they both be safe, but they're not the same thing. And the other thing I want to do is here's an extreme argument, an extreme fallacy, a sort of association fallacy. It's good to put your money in banks. Rivers have banks. And we'll put your money in the river. Well, you know, obviously we're using the word bank too. But it has the form of a logical syllogism. It has the form of a valid syllogism. But that fallacy doesn't change the meaning of the word. Or do we? And that's all the syllogism that comes with a lot, an awful lot. Like two parties are equally bad. And my answer to that is, yeah, well, they may be bad, but that doesn't mean they're equally bad. You know, you have a choice between AIDS and herpes. They're both bad, but they're not equally bad. All the voters, because they're both bad.
On the spectrum,
yeah. There's a lot of that false progress. We haven't been in the you hear both sides of the story, evolution and creation. Like they're on equal footing. No, they're not.
I don't know if it has any problem. We just, we're in home. One of the things we noticed was that many of the churches weren't in the church. They were apartment buildings and there were restaurants and museums and all that. And I asked my office, why are all these churches converted? And I said, it's one equal.
Nobody goes.
Yeah, and you know, I remember I was an interesting study where they actually looked at homes and to look at the happiness of it, right? And many people believe that happiness was attributed to lower tax. Some attributed happiness to a high spiritual thing, right? And here they looked at all of them and said one of the highest happiness in them, one of the highest taxes. And one of the most pagan countries in all of Europe. So that sort of doesn't, as a society, doesn't make sense.
Well, Western European democracy are kind of the ideal. And they're the argument for it. They say if you take prayer out of school, the whole colony falls apart. Well, that's not happening. Right. Those are the happiest people. The name is Swedes and Dutch. So, it's the world happiest.
We didn't have prayer in school when I went to school in the U.S. It came in and it was absolutely wonderful.
Really?
It was under God.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
When I went to the budget, head under God.
Yeah.
We didn't have any prayer. No, when I did more boring. It's just under God and Eisenhower.
Yeah. When I had the pledge of allegiance to one nation undivided.
Wow.
It's pretty I changed it to Gun Nation, Plunder Fraud. where there's liberty, a justice for a fall.
You were talking about the Declaration. What is the Declaration of Independence for the allusion to God creates this, the Creator. And it's sort of like, you know, it insinuates that there is some higher level that you just don't question. And what it brings up for me, and I haven't studied it that much, but I'm always concerned about the financial aspects of atheism, like taxes. There was one lawsuit brought for us, I believe, in the state of New York about taxing church property. And I believe the Supreme Court did turn it down, said no with us. But my picture of what he was saying was like, obviously, you don't tax churches. It's sort of like, this is so sacred. You don't do it. You know, and I get the idea that there's, in government, somewhere, there's always this level that governs.
Well, in America.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. In Germany, don't they automatically tax you to support the church?
If you go to church, you pay. If you have a TV, you pay.
And you don't pay your taxes in very
interesting. We need to put aside in what part of Europe with the state team to go to church.
Right.
Because it's a term, I think it's a way of keeping genealogical records, a bunch of things. But it's seen as a useful service.
Well, the church service that it needs, and you can go down like a woman. It really encourages to support churches. I mean, they throw out an occasional sandwich. This is my opinion. I think the charity is way overblown. You know, whenever you have to get a look at an audit of an individual church or a whole church that's larger, you see the same thing. It's always about somewhere between 7% and 9% of charity. They're really not charitable organizations. I'll bet all of us gave 3 to 7% to charity, you know, for us. We don't consider ourselves charitable organizations, but what they do, and it's always been mentioned that only the charitable work they do should be taxed.
Only the what?
Only the charitable work they do is taxed. So if your budget is 95%, if 95% of your budget goes to supporting the church and mission and whatever outreach, it's all just promoting religion, that should be taxed. Why can anybody support that? Except the people that are involved in it. They
how would you enforce that?
I mean, you ought to interpret it. You include your book.
Yeah, right.
I like that.
I don't know how expensive it is.
I like the name of what the reverend is in Atlanta with a 25,000 member church. His name is River Dollar.
What's the other one's name?
Rico A. Dollar.
Yeah.
CRESLO.
You
can have TV forever. People are like the 10 wealthiest pastors in America. Up there with that, like, all those teams and all of them.
Yeah, there's money in them,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Can you give us a quick explanation on how or why we did put One Nation Under God, you know, when I was a kid, I remember not. And then also, who did it for the money that we have on our money? So we deal with it, or is it the U.S. the only country that has their...
Perfect round, and the cream was in the sound, and it gets that. Oh, it was a national scandal.
Yeah, sure.
That's the VT claim.
That he did that.
That was the victory.
That's all you have to do is just.
Well, that's okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you don't ever have to think a lot of time.
No.
The issue is with the dog, people being gay. The strong thing of the gay community has been, but we were born this way.
Mm-hmm.
And that same kind of thing with transgender. But now, and we don't like the pastors and whoever going around trying to make me something else that I'm not. But now that we are learning more and more about the genetics, where now maybe it becomes possible to in fact change the genetics so you're not gay or you're not transgender, and erase huge other issues where the transgender community is somewhat concerned about now people are going to go and try to monkey with their stuff.
AI thinks it's going to live forever.
Look, if you're talking AI, you're talking something that's programmed. Well, who's to say that something can't be programmed to do something destructive?
It can be.
So you have, and can we conclude that it's absolutely impossible that AI can never evolve?
You're playing yourself, that's when you're at the speed of a single-day bridge.
homecoming to work to. They've got a family of four, and you're on your own. And they're communicating with one another.
There is also you either get crushed and everyone dies, or they make a decision. You've lost your bread. So we want to meet it. How do we solve it in your work?
Can you flip?
Everybody, you know, we have to leave. You're free to stay in chat.